Welcome back, everyone, to the XCast. The truth is in here. I am Tony Black, your host for the second bit of coverage on My Struggle 4, the season series, who knows, finale of the XCast. The XCast or the X-Files, not the XCast. This isn't the finale, don't worry. This is just the beginning.
Or is it, Tony? We're not sure. Is it? You'll be giving interviews to the Hollywood Reporter afterwards, raising all sorts of questions.
Yeah. Can Tony rejuvenate with alien DNA? Yes.
Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows?
Is Darren actually American? I mean, you know, you could read it that way, but I mean, you never really know on this podcast.
You never know on the XCast. And yeah, joining me again is Darren Mooney for this discussion of all the supporting characters. We've done Mulder and Scully, and let's not talk about them again because it's too sad. But we've got loads of other people to talk about. I mean, let's try and list them. William, Skinner, The Smoking Man, Monica Reyes, Tad O'Malley, Mr. Y, Erica Price.
Kirsch, don't forget
Kirsch. Kirsch. unless he's too busy on the internet.
They have it on computers now.
Right, okay, so let's start with Skinner, okay? Because, just a shout out and a warning, Sarah, I know you're listening, Sarah. I'm sorry, but he's dead.
Are you sorry?
I am sorry, right? I really am.
Come on, I mean, it looks like, to quote Carter's Hollywood Reporter review, I mean, it looks like he dives under the car.
Well, I mean, the only thing is, right, I'm either a sad man or just an obsessive, but I've freeze-framed in slow motion that whole scene, and... I've gone through it freeze frame trying to unpick it, and which is crazy. But I'm sure he gets crushed under that car. I'm sure of it. Right?
Well, if he survived, it was by the Skinner of his teeth.
Very good, very good. Pun of the day award. The thing is, I suppose, Kitten sort of set up this, didn't it? It set up this heroic, you know, hero's death for Skinner. And apparently, I read an interview earlier with Mitch Pileggi in which he basically said at the start, when they found out they were coming back, he said, oh yeah, if we're coming back for one last go, let's give Skinner a big heroic death and all this kind of thing. And then later on he went, Chris, I didn't mean it.
Too late, oops.
But I don't know, if this is what they were going for.
Is it Kitten, a big like heroic say, death?
Set it up, exactly. I mean, that's what I was going to ask you. I don't know if that works at all here.
His big accomplishment is shooting Reyes in the face, and don't worry, we'll talk about Reyes in a moment. Like, and going to an this is like, you know, I'm not a big fan of some of the tone of internet commentary, but I do like this observation that Skinner went to the Prometheus school of running away from things, where there was a stairwell right there. There was a stairwell just on his left, on the other side of the alleyway. But he was like, no, I'm going to run towards the Jeep. And I mean, like, again, I love Prometheus, I should be entirely honest. So I don't actually, I don't give that criticism too much truck. Unlike Skinner.
Yes.
I actually do. I found that's a rather disappointing sort of end to Skinner, if that is the end of Skinner. He dies shooting a season 9 lead in the face and getting crushed between two cars by an 80-year-old. Who can't be bothered to shoot him in the face afterwards. Like, the cigarette-smoking man gets out, sees the body lying on the ground, and he can't even be bothered to, like, fire an execution shot. It's like, nope, not really worth it.
Can you imagine, right? Can you imagine going back to 2001, 2002, to Darren then, and saying, Darren, you've just watched nothing important happened today, right? You've just seen Doggett and Reyes become, like, the new lead characters in the X-Files. In 16 years, Reyes is going to be a villain. She's going to be working with the Smoking Man. Skinner's going to shoot her in the face, and then he's going to get run over by her and the Smoking Man and maybe die. What do you think Darren circa 2002 would have said to you?
Darren circa 2002 would have said, and probably would have been right, it'll probably be much more interesting than this.
Yeah, he would have been right, to be
because
fair.
Because it's gonzo. Like, it is absolutely gonzo, which is not necessarily good, but at least it's more engaging and sort of like, I feel like we're talking more about this than we talked about, because we did discuss My Struggle 2, I believe, the two of us together. Not My Struggle 2, we discussed Nothing Important Happened at 8, you know, between the two of us as well. So I feel like we're talking more about this. This is more interesting and exciting, even if it's not necessarily good. But it is more engaging. It's more interesting to pick apart, I think, than those season 9 episodes, which is something of itself.
Yeah, well, no, it is. It is. I remember the Podwatch episode for that one. We both were sitting there going, what were we talking about? What should we talk about? I think we went on like massive tangents. No, it's true. I mean, I think it just... I'm disappointed, though, in the sense that... I mean, I hope he's not dead, obviously. Skinner's awesome. I really don't want him to be. Yeah. It does look like he is. And I think if that's the case, it's a shame.
Tony, you know that season 12 is going to begin, and this will make Sarah very happy, with a slow motion shot of My Struggle 5 with a voiceover by Mitch Pileggi as he bench presses the two trucks. Come on.
My Struggle 5 is Skinner's Struggle. I'm down for that.
Literally to lift the cars. I would actually really like a mythology episode that was in the style of like 127 hours with Skinner trapped beneath those two cars, wondering why Mulder and Scully haven't bothered to come look for him yet.
That's
my pitch. That's my season 12 pitch. That. Yeah.
Adam Silver can have that for his Lost Episodes Twitter that he's got going. I mean, it doesn't work as a hero's sort of tragic sacrifice, because he doesn't like you said, he could have. I mean, that's the one thing I love Prometheus too, but that is the one thing every time I watch it I'm going, just run left, you know, every single time. It just doesn't make any sense, and I'm so Skinner just deserved better, really. And you know what, even though he had more to do this season than season 10, I still think they didn't get it right, you know, with Skinner. And again, you know, it's a shame. Let's talk a little bit about the first of his killers, maybe. Wily Smokey, as I've decided to call him, because he might as well be in a Looney Tunes cartoon now, to be fair, this guy. I think the Smoking Man, what on earth have they done to him? I mean, that's all I can say. This episode capped off for me. Any shred of that character that was amazing is gone now.
Well, I mean, there's something like almost resigned in the way Mulder shoots him a couple of times in the body and lets him fall into the water. Where like Mulder almost seems to accept that even if he shot him in the head, decapitated him, kept the head in a fridge in his office, that the man would still find his way back to life. It feels like even Mulder is at the stage where, look, we burnt the skin off your face. I feel like the best I'm going to do is get rid of you for like the summer hiatus.
I did love that, actually. I did love the way he just didn't even bother having a conversation with him. He just ran out and just shot him and then was like, oh, you bastard, pushed him in the river. Yeah. That was great. I thought, well, they're way past words, aren't they now? Good for him. Good for him. I like the way he did that.
And I mean, like, I'm going to be honest, like, the cigarette-smoking man, you're right when you say that he's like a shadow, or, you know, he's a pale specter of his former self. And I mean, I would argue that, yeah, you should have left him dead probably at the end of season 7, if we're being entirely honest. Mm. But I actually quite liked, and you joked at the start of this podcast, like the number of people we're going to have to rush through in order to like to talk about the people in these episodes. I like the fact that My Struggle 4 had a relatively small and contained like family thing going on. Like you had, you know, obviously the father, the father, the son, and the other son, where you had like William Mulder and the Cigarette Smoking Man as effectively three generations, even though they're actually two. But let's not talk about that. But you have this sort of like weird family dynamic, which like again isn't very well executed, isn't very well written, but in concept works relatively well as like a simple culmination of the show. Like one of the things we liked, or I liked, about The Truth was the fact that it gave you like Mulder and the Smoking Man confronting his father and son, which is something that plays throughout the X-Files and something Carter's very interested in. I quite like that My Struggle 4, and again, even if the execution wasn't great, it was a much stronger throughline here than it was in The Truth, gave you like fathers and sons sort of reconciling. Now, again, you can argue about how Scully was shortchanged in that dynamic, and I really think she was, particularly if it's Gillian Anderson's last episode, but I did like you know, the stuff that happened with, like, William and Mulder being, like, interchangeable throughout the episode. Like, them sort of swapping places and cutting between them. And even, like, the really nice edits that Carter did, like, during the chase sequences, where it would be William 1 minute and Mulder the next. And,
yeah,
and
that
even
was good.
The juxtaposition of, the, like, them arriving at the same place at different times, but intercut with one another as if to suggest that they're possibly the same person. Like, actually, I actually quite liked that aspect of it. And I feel like the Smoking Man, in some small way, kind of played into that as, like, the grandfather, like, patriarch figure, the killing of the father. But you're right when you say he's just a specter of his former self. There's nothing you can really do with this character at this point. Although I do admire having a small, like, having a very small circle of characters here, as opposed to, say, season 9, where you were introducing new characters left, right, and center. I feel like My Struggle 4 had a small enough core, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess so. And it did revolve around that core group. You're right. And yeah, I think William B. Davis is great. You know, I think the Smoking Man as a character is brilliant. I preferred him more in My Struggle 3 than here. I suppose that's because it's his struggle, you know, and I liked the sort of new sort of recasting him with this almost new sort of backstory mythology in that. And I think in this, he obviously just serves a purpose, really, doesn't he, as a villain, as the, you know, the stock villain that they need to sort of defeat, really, in many ways. And so I get his role in that, in this, but it's just like, I mean, you know, like I say, Chris Carter sort of hinted that he can rejuvenate, you know, because he might as well, you know, given everything else. So he's probably not dead. He's probably just like having a little bit of a kip at the bottom of that river. So they could always bring him back. It's there is no way now that they can't bring that guy back now. Yeah. So if they want to, they can.
I love the idea that next time he confronts Mulder, he pops out a glass eye. And it's like, every time that Mulder kills him now, he has to, like, pop out a replacement organ. It's like, oh, don't worry, I'm going to detach my peg leg now after season 17.
In the end, he's going to end up like one of the brains in a jar, heads in a jar, like in Futurama, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's basically where we're heading with him. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I can see that. I think that he's had better days, really. But, you know, he serves a purpose.
I did admire his shout out to Brandy and Monica, though, the bit where he confronts Mulder or William at the pier thinking he's Mulder and says, I'm sorry that you seem to be confused. He belongs to me. The boy is mine. And Mulder is so confused that he doesn't. And that should have been the giveaway that it was William, was that he didn't get the 90s pop reference there.
Yeah. The thing is, I suppose, I mean, the other interesting thing is that he describes again, he says, I'm William's creator. He doesn't say father. You know, he says creator. So it's again, a lot of people accuse Carter of swerving away from the very mucky, you know, sort of insemination, medical rape of Scully. But he doesn't see himself in that way. You know, I don't think he sees a sexual angle to this, the Smoking Man. He has simply used a woman, created a child for his own use. You know, he even says to Mulder, you know, when I brought you life, you know, I never thought I would end it. So he even talks to Mulder in that sort of arch terms. He doesn't, you know, he never talks to him like a father. You know, I'm your father. I created you. I brought you life. You know, he talks like a god.
Yeah. Well, he sees himself as a god.
I mean, you could
also even argue that, like, that ties into, as we mentioned in the last episode, the idea of William as an idea or an experiment, where William feels more like a failed concept in a TV show than an actual character with, like, a mother and father. You know, I was never a mother to him, Scully says. It's like William is, and, like, when you know, the Smoking Man talks about himself as a creator, it's almost like he's talking about himself as a writer or as, like, a producer on the show. And, I mean, you got to keep in mind Davis wrote, you know, Enemy, which has been retroactively made several times more creepy. And, I mean, this is an episode where he undressed Scully while she was sleeping already, so it's not as if that was a low baseline you were starting from. But, yeah, there is something in that, and I think you're right when you say, like, you know, it's very much like a god am I. And there is something I wondered about that when he said that, you know, the mom and dad tagline, I brought you into this world and now I'm going to take you out of it. And I'm wondering, like, was Mulder a conscious choice for the cigarette smoking man? I always assumed that it was like he was having an affair and it happened by accident. So I don't imagine the cigarette smoking man was thinking that much about anything when Mulder was conceived, apart from, oh, hey.
Another baby. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, this is the thing. He could have been. You know, maybe he's been trying to get this Project Crossroads going for years. You know, Mulder was born in like 1960 or whatever. Who knows? You know, there's a lot you can. Who knows? You know, as they rewrite the mythology as they go, it's anything's possible at this stage. I'll tell you one other thing that was interesting, a bit separate, I suppose. But one of the interviews I read, and this goes back to My Struggle 3, and I talked about this in my blog post about it. Apparently, you might already know this, but apparently when Spender appeared in My Struggle 3, that was supposed to be Doggett.
Yes. Yeah.
I think Spender works better in that role in some respects, because he was in William, you know, and he was trying to protect William then, you know, as a baby. So I kind of buy that he kind of just be hanging around trying to look out for him, especially given the Smoking Man and what Smoking Man did to Spender and all this kind of thing. So I kind of feel it works better as Spender. But wouldn't that have been interesting to see Doggett in that role in that episode?
And I mean, like, okay, I think I've been relatively generous to Carter with regards to the My Struggle episode, so I feel like I can get away with saying I am extremely glad that Robert Patrick was not able to come back for these episodes, given how Reyes was treated. I mean, I think you're right that Spender works quite well in those episodes, and I was surprised not to see him here, although I do think it works well in terms of streamlining. Well, when I was watching My Struggle 3, the inclusion of Spender seemed like a strange element, because he was introduced and then he was gone. It's like you imagined that he'd be hanging around, that there'd be some sort of like use for him in some grander purpose apart from to deliver exposition and then just sort of vanish into the ether. Like, you imagine that if you bring him back in the first episode, he's like, it's Chekhov's Spender. It's like you bring him back in the first episode and he pays off in the final episode, except he doesn't really. And I mean, again, I like the fact that the fourth episode is streamlined, and I think this is more down to one of the issues I had with the third, which was it felt very cluttered on top of the obvious issues with the revelation that we've already talked about at the end. So I mean, I was happy to see Spender. Like, I like seeing the actor. I like seeing, like, I love Spender as a character when he appeared in the fifth and sixth seasons, but I feel like he didn't need to come back in some ways. And it's weird that you got that reference where, as we pointed out I think yesterday, where it's like, well, I shot my second son once. You know, and you're like, that's a very odd reference to bring back to remind people of Spender's existence, because that makes me wonder where, like, Spender is in this. If Spender's like, okay, big bro, you deal with the dad stuff, I'm off living my second career writing, fan fiction on the internet. I'm going to write the next big fantasy bestseller. You guys deal with this. You got this.
He's off writing Jack Colquitt adventures, because Smokey Man can't anymore. No, but somebody pointed out, though, that it could be, the reason he said that maybe about the second born son is that it's the whole two fathers one son thing again with William, which is quite an interesting observation, actually, even though obviously technically Mulder's his brother, not his father. Now I can't even believe I'm saying that, but like it's that whole two fathers one son thing. Maybe that's the inference. Well, but
there's a certain element of that there, because I mean, two fathers one son is really actually one of the more underrated aspects of it, is the way that it does, it kind of plays out that you only become your father sort of theme, where Mulder is confronted with this terrible choice about knowing that the end of the world is coming, and he decides in a panic to save himself and Scully, which is a, you know, some people object to that characterization of Mulder. I think it's a very canny observation that, like, if the world is ending, that Mulder would basically buckle under the pressure and say, look, I can save myself and Scully, that's what we're going to do. And it's like he becomes, in that moment, he becomes like Bill Mulder and the CSM. He becomes both of those parents. And I feel like there's an element of that here where William literally becomes, you know, not his biological father, but his metaphorical father, where he swaps places with Mulder. And so you do have that, like, literal transubstantiation, that literal son becoming the father. You know, and you have that nice joking line at the start where he jokes about telling therapists what they want to hear, and he's like, oh, I dream I'm becoming my father. And then, like, and again, you know, Carter's writing may not be particularly elegant or sort of smooth, and his dialogue may not be great, but I like the payoff of that at the end, where he becomes his father in a very literal sense, even if it's not literally his father.
Well, let's talk a little bit about William, because he's, as a character, I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about him in regards to Mulder and Scully, but him as a character, you know, obviously he was introduced in Ghoulie, an episode that I don't love as much as everybody else does, really. I need to go back and watch it properly again, but I didn't think it was bad by any means. I just didn't really love it, to be honest. And I think I didn't like William in that, really. I didn't like who he was. I thought he was just a bit of a dick. And I liked him more in this. I think he's got more, because he's more vulnerable and you kind of do get to know him a bit more. I think one of the success stories of My Struggle 4 is William, actually. I think in the sense of his characterization, not necessarily in some of the plot choices, but I think some of his characterization, I think Miles Robbins was better as the character in this. I think he had a stronger role to play. And I just feel that he was more relatable.
Yeah, I mean, even the introduction, which is like, because the issue with like Carter's prose is it's often telling you things that you already know. And so like you're playing over montages of things that you've already seen on the show or montages that explicitly contradict what you've already seen on the show. What's interesting about William, and this is like William's struggle, this is William's struggle in My Struggle 4, is that you see basically what looks like a really weird spin-off of The X-Files that you just never watched, where it's like, like if this was Mulder doing his monologue, he'd be telling you things that you already knew from the past 10 seasons. And the cigarette smoking man does that, but he tells you things that contradict what you've seen over the past 10 seasons. Whereas with William, it's just like you've only met this character once before. So here's a whole bunch of random exposition that just gives you his entire life backstory, like the highlights of like a previous previously on William, like it's clumsy and it's awkward, but it kind of works because it gives you a sense of like where the character is coming from. It makes him feel tangible in a way. And I liked him in Ghoulie because I feel like he felt like a real kid. I feel like if a teenager had those abilities, they would probably be just as irresponsible, jerkish, selfish, and short-sighted as William is in Ghoulie. I feel like it was a reasonable characterization of him there. And I feel like he works relatively well here. I feel like he works better than he should here, probably is the best way to put it.
Yeah, he does. And it is surprising in a way. I think maybe it's because he does get a lot to do, you know. And like you said, there's a lot of parallels between him and Mulder in some of the shoot, the way it's shot and things like
that. Even their costuming. Even like they're wearing the costuming. Same hoodies and the same shirts and everything.
I think there's quite some interesting creative choices there. And, you know, let's face it, he could do some badass stuff. I mean, one of my favourite moments is the let's explode Erica Price scene, which is just the sheer balls of that. I've got to love it. And I love the fact when Mulder comes out and he calls Scully, even Mulder, with everything he's seen over the past 25 years, what he says to Scully is, you're not going to believe what's just happened. Because I've just seen our son explode four people. And I mean, it's a shame for Barbara Hershey because she must have signed up expecting a better role than this.
Yeah, she has, I think, one line in My Struggle 4, which amounts to take him alive. You're like, this is Barbara Hershey. Like, this is like Mr. Y, who's played by an actor who is not Barbara Hershey, got like much more to do in this episode. I got a much more graceful and dignified exit than bounding through the door and having their head exploded.
She basically walks into scanners. Yeah, that's essentially what happens.
When you say the plot of this episode out loud, it sounds it's absurd.
It's crazy. It is loopy. I mean, it is wonderfully loopy. But I love that. I think that's one of my favourite moments because Mulder's face is just like, the fuck? even he is like, Jesus Christ. Because William obviously now is truly like, I mean, he goes one step further than like Gibson Praise, doesn't he? I mean, Gibson Praise was like a super telepathic sort of alien child, whereas William could do the lot, really. He, you know, he can sort of be anywhere, be anyone, almost. You know, he's almost got a level of omnipotence about him. Some of these powers, you know, the way he's developing and growing, he's immortal, you know, he can't die, it seems.
And he kills pedophiles when they pick him up at the side of the road, which is one of those wonderful small choices where I'm like, this is something that actually happened. Like, everything else going on in the episode, it's like, Carter didn't just imply that William got picked up by a pedophile and then exploded him, did he? Oh, he did.
And the scene with the trucker and where he decides to bring Ghoulie back briefly for a cameo. I loved that. I thought that was great. You know, that was a great little moment where, you know, these little touches, I think, actually, you know, and there's some real gore. I mean, the last two episodes, I mean, parts of this give, like, Nothing Lasts Forever a run for its gore money. You know, and I think it's not afraid of showing that. You know, with when Erica Price finds the guy and his guts are literally all over the seat, and so William is just really sort of powerful, and even though he can do all these horrendous things, he's still relatable. Well, not relatable, but he's still
he's a teenager. They're basically all sociopaths. Yeah. Say that as somebody who was a teenager. Now, like, one of the things I actually really like about the treatment of William, and the treatment of kids, actually, because it happens, it comes up also in James Wong's episodes as well. Like, it comes up both in Nothing Lasts Forever, which he directed, and Founder's Mutation, which he wrote and directed, is this weird conversation seems to take place in the, like, 11th season of The X-Files, where there's this entire, like, younger generation of superheroes. Like, it's like when Mulder and Scully encounter kids, it's like they're not just, like, regular kids, like, kids that, you know, people interact with, or teenagers like they would have encountered on, like, the, you know, the original show. It's like, no, they're encountering, like, modern teenage characters as they exist on television. So as they appear on, like, the CW shows. Like, basically, Nothing Lasts Forever was, like, a crossover with Arrow, whereas this is like something from Legion, where it's like, no, this guy can control the world with his brain. And, like, I mean, the trucker even compares him to, like, one of those X-Men, because that's the franchise that we own the rights to. And you had Juliet, I think, last week was described as an Avenger, wink, wink, if you get my meaning. So it's kind of, it's interesting to see the show having what feels like a conversation with, like, the next generation of television through, like, these next generation characters, almost.
And the fact that it's blatantly become a comic book. You know, certainly in episodes like this, I mean, it really is just a comic book sort of thing.
Brought
to life, and it has evolved in that way. So yeah, William was very interesting. So there's, you know, a lot of supporting characters flying around in the mix. To be honest, let's not even bother talking about Reyes, because what's the point?
You know, it's like, she makes it,
but just. What was the point? What honestly was the point? Like, it absolute waste of time.
Yeah, like, I'm one of those people who's like, I understand when fans get angry about things, but I try not to get too angry. Like, I'm more disappointed. I'm generally a disappointed fan rather than an angry fan. So I'm like, I'm disappointed with the treatment of Scully and the revelation of the cigarette-smoking man. I'm disappointed with the fact that, you know, this episode has Mulder running around and Scully sort of waiting patiently and sort of feeling emotionally stressed. But the way that Reyes is treated comes very close to making me angry. And I mean, and this is really weird because I don't actually like Reyes that much as a character.
Which no, me neither.
Where this anger comes from is almost strange to me, because it feels very much like Carter is basically doing what he did with William at the end of the episode, where he's basically saying the 8th and 9th seasons of the show really don't count. We're going to pretend basically that they didn't happen. We're going to erase them, almost. We're going to sort of gloss over them. They were a mistake. They never should have happened. And I'm like, look, the 9th season, fine. Wipe that out if you want. The 8th season was actually really good.
It's it was. One of the best seasons, actually, of the show.
It really was. And it feels like bringing Reyes back and making her betray Mulder and Scully and then having her shot in the face by Skinner, which you can't stress enough. Like, Skinner is ambiguously dead despite being crushed under two cars. Reyes gets shot point blank in the head while not really driving the car that she's holding the wheel of. It's not a glorious death, and it's not as if the character had a really good run up until that point either. It's like, no. It's the little cherry sundae. It's a little cherry on top of the crap sundae that, you know, Reyes has been served. And I feel really bad for Annabeth Gish, because she's been talking about how great it was to be back and how thrilled she was to be invited, and how she was going to have a much bigger role in the 11th season. And you're like, there are so many better things they could have done with Reyes.
Yeah, there was. And it didn't even materialise, you know, that bigger role. For whatever reason, things must have changed. You know, and I think it's a shame because, I mean, she didn't want to run Skinner over. You know, she tries to stop the smoking man when he, you know, he goes for it.
You say the plot of this episode out loud, it sounds crazy. She didn't want to run Skinner over, but she had to.
she sort of tees up Mulder and Scully, you know, finding William, because she calls them to try and put them on, you know, what turns out to be, a fake lead almost. But there are moments of you know, redemption, but it's not enough. It doesn't undo the damage. It doesn't make anything better, really. And in the end, it's all just a pointless return and a pointless death if she's dead. Because again, Chris Carter's going, well, you know, she may not be dead. You know, we didn't see her die. We didn't see anybody die. Let's face it, we didn't see anyone die in this episode, really.
You saw Reyes die more convincingly than everybody else, which feels like a very pointed gesture. Like, Like, you have William rising from the dead at the end. I'm surprised he doesn't walk on water at the end of the episode. You have Mulder, who can't be bothered to shoot the smoking man in the head because he's just going to be back anyway. You have the cigarette smoking man who's like, Skinner's under the car. I should probably check that, but... why not?
It'll be fine. Yeah. He'll be fine. He's done boxing. He's strong. He'll be okay. But yeah, it is bonkers. It is all bonkers, really. So yeah, that's all the supporting characters, really, in this episode.
But we never talked about Kirsch discovering the internet.
No, that's true. Outro, yeah.
And he still got treated better than Reyes.
He did in that one wonderful line, you know. And he shuts the X-Files down because he's got to be a bastard, really, because that's his job.
Never comes up again in the entire plot of the episode.
No, it's just like, forget that. Yeah. Let's conveniently get him to shut the X-Files down. That's fine. That's done. Lock that one off.
Does it contribute anything to the momentum or forward movement of the plot? No.
But then he didn't in Kitten either. In Kitten, he's just there to tell them to go and find Skinner. That's it again. So it's just...
I love the idea of Kirsch just sitting there at his desk, like, watching the paperweight move. It's like...
All he's doing is texting Skinner repeatedly going, where are you? This is outrageous. How dare you use the internet? Because there's that moment, isn't there, where he's got like 50 texts from Kirsch.
Kirsch is blowing up my phone, which is one of those great like Skinner young people quotes. It's like, obviously Skinner has seen the internet, it turns out.
Yeah, he's just about to discover hashtags now, and God knows what will happen when Kirsch discovers hashtags. Yeah. The world really is doomed then, I think. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow for one last bit of cut. I didn't expect this to be such a laugh. I've got to be honest. It's like this. The more we talk about this, the more it's basically like talking about a comedy. But we'll be back tomorrow to talk.
I didn't hate it. Like, I admire the fact that there's so much in here, even if most of it is insane. Like, there's a wonderful like adrenaline sugar rush quality. Like, it's no coincidence the episode ends with them literally going to the sugar factory. The entire episode feels like a trip to the sugar factory. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. But
no, it's good.
Gonzo.
It's good in its own way. But yeah, we'll be back to talk about Chris Carter and a little bit of a summation of season 11, I suppose, as well tomorrow. So until then, obviously remember Twitter, @thex_cast, Facebook, The Basement, The Xcast Basement, and on Patreon if you want to donate, Patreon.com/TheXcast. So yeah, we'll be back tomorrow for more MS4 madness. But until then, trust no one.